Yes, Canadian, something is going on tonight that is much more important than anything we could ever see in this country. It's more important than daycare. It's more important than the statocratic policies of our governments that we've been used to until the recent federal one anyway. It's more important than all our little petty concerns. It's the election of a new Congress for the most powerful country in the world. And for those of you out there who don't know where I stand on this, I'll repeat it, but I'm sure there aren't many. We are living in a time of a Pax Americana, not like a Pax Romana, but truly a Pax Libertà, a peace of liberty. And what happens tonight can determine very much the direction that the world will go in, and we will be swept up in those tumultuous tides. And the two areas that are going to be most affected by this are obviously foreign affairs and security and domestic affairs. And there are two statements from Ronald Reagan that affect both. He once said that of the wars in his lifetime, none came about because the U.S. was too strong. So for all the talk about military adventurism and what the West should be doing or where, America is leading Western nations to make people free. Not in the most elegant way sometimes, not in the easiest way, not in the cleanest way, but that's what they're doing. So if a Congress is elected tonight that reverses that, the world will be worse for it. The other thing that Reagan said is that the trouble with liberals is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that just isn't so. The most frightening things, words in the English language are, "Hi, I'm from the government. I'm here to help." Democrats are promising a lot of this help. Stephen Harper's attraction or attractiveness in Canada is that he's promised to roll back government. It would be shame if America, the tide in America, went the other way. And we're going to be examining the American elections tonight, and all networks are starting to report at 10 o'clock. You'll be seeing exit polls. They've all decided to hold their coverage till 10 o'clock tonight. But we're going to be examining the ramifications of the elections from several perspectives. One, basically heavily on the security side with Frank Gaffney Jr. later on in the hour. The possible effects on Canada with Lauren Gunther. And we're going to start with what it means for America at home with one of the most respected minds on the continent, and I dare say throughout the West on a number of issues. But on this issue, we're going to discuss a phrase that he coined called Kerryism, where a lot of Democrats of privilege seem to be falling all over themselves with, as he puts it, a pathological death wish spouting nonsense. Our pleasure again to welcome Victor Davis Hanson from the Hoover Institution. Good evening, Victor. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What is Kerryism as you defined it?
Well, it's an inverse of the old Democratic Party. The leaders of the Democratic Party, John Kerry being a good example, but also Ted Kennedy or Howard Dean or megaphones like George Soros or Ted Turner. These are very, very affluent people who have been beneficiaries of the very capitalist system and free market system they're so critical of. And what we're seeing is, I would call it a Vanity Fair party, where Hollywood, the campus, the elite media, the sort of theater art crowd has taken over the Democratic Party. And so people are unhappy with the war, perhaps, or unhappy with the deficit, they're unhappy with illegal immigration, and maybe they will vote for enough Democrats to take the House. But that elite does not appeal to the old Democratic issues of working class concerns. And as long as the Democratic Party wants to voice things like partial birth abortions, gay marriage, high taxes, more entitlements, UN, world government, this type of stuff, rather than the old issues of let's balance the budget, let's close the borders, let's win in Iraq, the Harry Truman agenda, they're never going to get 51% of the vote. They may do well in a year when there's a Watergate or there's an unpopular war, or the Republicans are plagued with scandals, but their basic agenda is not going to capture the hearts and minds of Americans until they change it.
Is there an interesting undercurrent in the Democratic Party in this election where we're seeing some old-time Democrats on that agenda that you're talking about, people like Joe Tester in Montana, who are called your grandfather's kind of Democrat?
Yeah, I think there's more, and that's why they're doing a little bit better. Ford in Tennessee has been running on a conservative platform. So is Webb in Virginia. And, of course, Joe Lieberman, the new Democrat, the far-left crazy people thought they were so cute in getting rid of Lieberman in the primary, and he just turned around and is going to win tonight in the general election. That really sends a message to them that they do very well when they mask or they forget or they hide this agenda. And remember that no Democratic president since JFK has been elected without a Southern accent. So when they want to win, they got to put up a guy like Gore, who got the popular vote, or Clinton, or Carter, or LBJ, because Americans equate that Southerness with sort of a popular conservatism.
Right.
Every time they put up a Mondale, or you know, Kerry, or a McGovern, or a Dukakis from the Eastern Seaboard, they just reaffirm that message that they're out of touch with America.
Victor Davis Hanson, we'll be right back with you in a moment, and I'm glad you brought up Kennedy, because I want to compare certain positions of Ted Kennedy from 1980 till today. Montreal, will be right back. And if you're on a cell phone, star 940 for Rogers and #940 for Bell users. We're talking about the American election tonight, all night. Come on, people, you got to understand what it means for you. It's only the biggest, most successful democracy in the world, the biggest power in the world. Shouldn't say the biggest democracy, that's India. And it's our privilege tonight to start the hour off with Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution. Victor, you mentioned Kennedy, and I'm struck by one thing that really angers me every time he opens his mouth, particularly on foreign policy. In 1980, when Ted Kennedy made his run against Jimmy Carter for the Democratic nomination, and he made that wonderful speech at the Democratic convention that ended with the hope still lives, the work continues, the dream shall never die. One of the centerpieces of his campaign was that Carter was weak on security policy. He'd been weak on Iran. This was 26 years ago. Now we've got a Middle East aflame with tyrants left and right telling us that they're going to absolutely whack the West. And Ted Kennedy has become, I'm not even going to call him the voice of the peaceniks, because that would insult anybody who legitimately has a solution for a peaceful world. What's happened to that hard left? Not the soft left guys, but the Kennedy left.
Two things happened. One is that the Democrats have not had control of an elected control of the House and Senate in 12 years, and only 8 of the last 26 have they had a president. So they're very angry, and rather than press that attack on domestic issues, they've changed their foreign. They don't believe in bipartisan foreign policy anymore because they don't have a wedge issue. So they've forsaken the old Truman idea that Truman had sort of the same policy as Eisenhower. Kennedy and Nixon weren't that far apart.
Right.
And so they need something to gain a partisan advantage. And the second is, look, we're looking at the wages, the philosophical wages of multiculturalism that's been preached in among our elites and our universities, that says that no culture can be any worse than the West. So when the jihadists sort of grafted their cause, and I saw that in the 1980s when Hamas was posing as if they were poor blacks or disenfranchised American natives or Chicanos who were impoverished. And when once that fascistic agenda got superimposed onto the American left's sort of constituencies, then the Democratic Party became morally fuzzy on this class, if I could use that term, the class of civilization. So they really don't believe that there is such a thing as Islamic fascism. They've withdrawn a lot of their support from Israel. They've turned abrogated responsibility, and they've turned over a lot of decision-making, they think, to the UN. And it's part of this larger agenda that we have lost confidence in an exceptional idea of Western culture. There's a larger philosophical reason, and there's the more partisan short-term explanation.
You're describing the situation of the Canadian Liberal Party that was in power for 12 years and ended up with absolutely no policies other than statocratic engineering and a little bit of twiddling here and there and getting into our underwear and every conceivable issue, because they wouldn't address major issues like defense, foreign policy, the healthcare crisis that we have up here. And you're describing a Democratic Party in similar disarray with being completely out of touch with what they like to call as the common man that they're supposed to represent.
Yeah, their historic role was to be a watchdog on the power of capital, to make sure that the free market economy was not distorted by very talented but ruthless individuals, and that the person who worked hard and played by the rules had a fair shake.
I think it was Churchill who first said something like that, to reward individual initiative but not with untrammeled privilege and power.
Yeah, that's what their
But role that was Churchill.
The problem is they've been taken over by multimillionaires, Hollywood celebrities, elite professors, anti-American activists, extremist groups that have certain racial or ethnic agendas, and until recently, they haven't been able to govern. And maybe this election they'll be able to get the House just because of this perfect Republican storm of the Foley scandal, the Abrahoff scandal, unhappiness with Iraq, and then the constant barrage by the New York Times, Washington Post, PBS, NPR, CBS. That takes a toll too, but it won't translate into a lasting constituency for rule unless they rethink their deviation from their old bread and butter agenda.
Last question before we let you go. But if it's a serious sweep, which is, I mean, very unlikely for them to take the Senate, would mean 9 turnovers or 8 turnovers. But if it's a serious sweep at a time of truly a global war on terror, truly a clash of civilizations, are these guys just saying this stuff and then they get power and they're going to get real, or are they so out to lunch Nancy Pelosi types that we all got to start just shaking our heads and heading for the nearest cabin in the woods?
I don't know, but I do feel that 9/11 was not an accident. It happened over an 8-year period of appeasement that saw us do nothing about Cobalt Towers, First World Trade Center, East Africa bombings, USS Cole, appeasement overseas, and I think the message was sent to the jihadists that there's a therapeutic government and under the Democratic auspices. And then Bush came in, and with his twang and his cowboyisms, scared the world. But he did send a message that you can't bluff this guy, and he's not going to listen to the last person he talked to, and he's not going to change. And they're deathly afraid of him. And you can see it from all of their communiques, and all of the newspapers and media in the Middle East really do feel that they have a much better shot with a different administration in power. I know that seems reductionist and sort of primordial to say that, but it's true.
But sometimes it happens, yeah.
Yeah, our enemies are rooting for George Bush and his party to lose. That's a fact.
That's a fact. Victor Davis Hanson, thanks very much for being with us tonight. Later tonight should be a very interesting time.
Yes.
Montreal, I'll be right back with Lorne Gunter. Our next guest really ticks me off sometimes because he produces so much stuff that you got to read, so much common sense, that by the time when he's not available to discuss one issue, he's already, thankfully, produced something else, but then I don't get to talk to him about the other issue. Lorne Gunter from Edmonton, welcome. National Post columnist. How are you, Lorne? All right.
Well.
I wanted you on income trust, so everybody, go to the National Post website. Google Lorne Gunter. You got to read his last stuff on income trusts. You can also go to Edmonton Journal and the Conservative Forum, and he's all over the place. But thankfully, you also wrote a terrific stuff, a piece on this election. And I want you to tell Canada, A, why you think the election matters, but more importantly, why you think that John Tester, a farmer who's running as a Democrat, is a litmus test for where this election is going.
Well, Tester's a populist. He's the kind of fellow that that 10 years ago, there would have been no doubt, I think, that he would have been running for the Republicans. But the Republicans have been in power now for a dozen years in the U.S. Congress, more than that off and on for the presidency. I mean, the presidency's been theirs more than not since the late 1960s. And so I think Tester's one of those guys who just doesn't like big government. And he thinks that the Republicans now have got their hooks into the lobbyists, the fundraisers, and all the money men, and as a result, they're not his party anymore. They don't represent a big, round-faced, burly, pot-bellied grain farmer from a place called Big Sandy, Montana, which is about
where you've been.
I've been there. Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I live in Alberta, so I'm just north of there, and I have lots of friends in Montana, and I've spent quite a bit of time there. And Big Sandy's a town of about 700 people.
Now, Lauren, we're going to come right back with you, and you're going to tell us why you're a little more optimistic about the nature of the Democratic Party than Victor Davis Hanson, who's just basically, not wrongly, but basically reduced the party to a bunch of elitist college professors and wealthy dilettantes. Montreal, Canada, we'll be right back with Lauren Gunter. And if you're on a cell phone, it's *940 on Rogers and #940 on Bell. And we're talking with Lauren Gunter, National Post columnist, an all-around common-sense guy for this country. So, Lauren, you're a little more optimistic, even if the Democrats take over one of the houses, and Victor Hanson is, about the kind of people we're going to get. But we're still going to get, I guess, a Nancy Pelosi speaker.
Yeah, and at that point, there's no disagreement. I don't disagree at all with Victor Davis Hanson on that. The Democratic Party at the top is as far left as it has ever been in the United States. It's, you know, Nancy Pelosi, a San Francisco congresswoman who is vehemently anti-war and claims to be proudly American, but it's hard to distinguish how that's possible. You've got John Kerry still very heavily involved in the party. You've got MoveOn.org, a really extreme left-wing, by American standards, website that has hundreds of thousands of members, and they're driving the agenda in the Democratic Party. I think it's very interesting that in the last 2 weeks, Pelosi, who will become the Speaker of the House of Representatives if the Democrats win control, which I think they will, she's been almost invisible because the Democrats don't want to remind people that they are still, they're sort of the wingy left-wing party that they have been for the last decade.
They're not only wingy left-wing, but they're very rich wingy left-wingers.
Oh, horribly rich. It's very interesting to me that in the last two presidential elections, for example, the people who voted Democrat were the usual suspects, the minority groups that you would expect to vote Democrat, then people on the coasts, of course, but people with incomes of over $75,000. They are the party of the well-heeled and the rich, despite
Is that the guilt vote?
I think so. I think it's also a baby boom vote. You know, baby boomers tend to be a little more liberal than the generations on either side of them.
But what does liberalism mean anymore today? Does it just mean that you oppose for the sake of opposing while proposing nothing except more programs to make the perfect quote-unquote human being that takes 100,000 more bureaucrats to walk in your office and home to make sure that you're perfect?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I think it's interventionist big government. It really is what would have been called socialism 40 years ago. I mean, 40 years ago, I was a liberal. And I don't like to think that I changed. I think the party changed.
Oh, absolutely. It's what Reagan said. When he was asked why he left the Democratic Party, he said, I didn't leave the party. The party left me.
Exactly.
We don't have any. There's no agenda for small-L industrial liberalism anymore.
No. And there's no sense that by making government bigger, you're making people less free. There's simply no way around that. I mean, there's this idea that government is the guarantor of all prosperity and freedom.
It brings to mind another Reagan quote, the taxpayer is someone who works for the federal government but doesn't have to take a civil service exam.
Exactly. You know, he also very famously in his first inaugural speech said, government isn't a solution, government's a problem. But the government is a solution to every problem in the minds of Democrats and other liberal and left parties in the Western world.
Bottom line, what does a Democratic-controlled Congress, even if it's just a House, mean for Canada?
You know, I don't think it means anything
much. Yeah.
You know, most of our relations are, no matter who's in power in Congress and no matter who's in power in the White House, most of our government-to-government relations are with the White House. There are some contacts with the Congress, and the Congress can make things miserable for us, for instance, by passing a law that makes it difficult for the White House to override the need for a passport to cross the border or for our beef to begin returning to the American markets after the mad cow. I mean, if the Democrats had been in charge of the House, the Senate, and the White House, we might still not be sending our beef down there. So it could mean something if 2 years from now the Democrats still have control of one House of Congress and they pick up the White House. But for the next couple of years, I don't think it means a great deal.
Lauren Gunter, one of Canada's rare storehouses of reason and sanity. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
How's the weather out there, by the way?
Freezing rain and cold.
All right, so that means we'll have it soon, too.
Absolutely.
Take care.
We'll send it to you.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
We'll be right back. Bottom line, this American election is really about security. Once again, to quote former President Reagan, of the four wars in my lifetime, he said, none came about because the U.S. was too strong. It's about who's going to keep America strong and keep the West strong. And we're very pleased to have with us Frank Gaffney, Jr., President and CEO of the Center for Security Policy. He's the author of War Footing, 10 Steps America Must Take to Prevail in the War for the Free World. Under President Reagan, he served as Assistant Secretary of Defense for Security Affairs. And he, in his the beginning of his political career, he served as an aide to one of my favorite statesmen, and I'll call him a statesman, that was Senator Henry Jackson. And when we're asked what we are at the Institute of Public Affairs, we say Henry Jackson Democrats. Frank Gaffney, welcome.
Good evening. Nice to be with you.
Okay, that's the bottom line. We've done domestic stuff with Victor Hansen. We've done effects on Canada with Lauren Gunter. Bottom line is, this is about America being able to pursue and prosecute its foreign policy and military policies against terror, which so many people think is a war rather than what it really is, which is an operation, almost like a police action where you've got to go into every corner and it's messy and it's dirty and it has to be done. What's the effect on the ability of America to do that with a Democratic House if that happens? Let's not even talk about a Democratic Congress.
Well, I think it is premature to say it is going to be a Democratic House, but assuming for the moment, for the purpose of discussion, that it is, the answer to your question will depend on what kind of Democratic House is it. Is it the Democratic House that the House leadership, the Democrats, have in mind, namely a very left-wing, anti-Bush, anti-Iraq, I think anti-war for the free world attitude and policy approach, or is it going to be a Congress that is run effectively by a block of Democrats that probably come as close to Scoop Jackson Democrats as any we've seen in a generation?
And this has been
and Republicans who will probably be more cohesive and I suspect more assertive in the minority than in the majority.
And this has been a running theme of the past 40 minutes on the show. People like John, like Joe Tester in the Montana Senate race, Chris Shays to watch in the Connecticut House race. Are there enough of these, as a lot of the American networks have said, your granddad's Democrats to make a difference?
It remains to be seen. I'm not sure.
Not even elected, just running.
Yeah, well, I think there are enough to make a difference. Again, it depends on how many of them get elected. Remember, those that are going to prevail, taking seats from House Republicans, are by and large going to be winning in districts that are conservative, relatively conservative Republican districts, not necessarily Chris Shays. But
three important ones in Florida, the 13th, 16th, and 22nd, are important ones to watch, too. Yeah,
right. And if in fact, you see a block that makes the difference between being the majority and being the minority for the Democratic Party, it will be, I think, the case that you'll find party discipline breaking down if Nancy Pelosi and her ilk try to take the House in a radical leftward lurch. And instead, you have this working majority made up of a minority Republicans and so-called Blue Dog Democrats or Scoop Jackson Democrats,
right,
or whatever you're going to call them in the future.
Is this a block with the strength of let's say, the Rockefeller Republicans who opposed both Goldwater and Nixon and tempered the Republican Party? Are they that strong?
Well,
they had a leader in Nelson Rockefeller. Do these common sense Democrats have a leader that can challenge a Nancy Pelosi?
It's a little premature to be saying that, since we don't even know whether they're going to get elected yet. I'm speculating here completely on the basis of sort of the background of these folks and the districts that they're representing. And my guess is that it will not be difficult for President Bush and a more assertive Republican minority to make clear to the American people that the kinds of policies that Nancy Pelosi and Charlie Rangel and John Conyers and Dennis Kucinich, all of whom will have, you know, chairmanships or leadership positions,
right,
mind, are really wildly out of line and thereby create a basis for a more moderate, more centrist, maybe even more conservative approach than certainly seems possible at the moment.
Frank Gaffney, Jr., will be right back with you after the short break. And you can email us with your comments after the show at info@iapm.ca. It's our pleasure to have Frank Gaffney, Jr., President and CEO of the Center for Security Policy. I recommend the site highly. Go to their website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Position papers on a whole host of subjects and common sense that you need to know and intelligence you need to know. And we're talking about the national security and foreign affairs ramifications of this election. Frank, if there is a victory by the Democrats in the House and the Republicans hold on to the Senate, one nullify the other? As long as the Republicans in the Senate aren't Lincoln Chafee Republicans?
Well, the nature of the Republican majority in the Senate may be sort of the flip side to the one that I just described in the House. You will have a handful of Republicans, like the senators from Maine, for example, and Chuck Hagel and perhaps a few others, who will still be probably leaning to the left in the Republican ranks, and I'm sure perceive the message of this election that they're more likely to survive if they go, which could give even a minority Democratic bloc in the Senate disciplined, organized, the working majority that they need to run the Senate in a direction more in keeping with the line the House will take. So it remains to be seen. I think that it's again premature since we really don't know how this is going to stack up. But my feeling about it is you're going to find this the both houses of Congress in the end run less by the capital initial of the parties than by the sort of pickup wind up calling the shots.
Frank Gaffney, Jr., thanks very much for joining us. And all I can wish for America tonight is what I wish for Canada, that you don't end up with a government or a house that can influence a government to have a policy which says if it moves, tax it, if it keeps moving, regulate it, and if it stops moving, subsidize it. Frank Gaffney, Jr., thanks very much. Andy's on the line, and you've been very patient as always.
Hi.
We're really running up against the clock, Andy.
Okay. Thing is, this election, if the Democrats do come in, I mean, the Republicans were no great government. Because it's the American, mentality. They're forgetting that there's a world out there, and they want to go by their own rules. Now, if the Democrat gets in, and they start reversing everything that the Republicans done, then the whole world will see that the United States, when it comes to security and the defense of freedom, is nothing. And the thing is this.
And that's the great danger, and as Bertrand de Jouvenel wrote in the 19th century, if that happens, then the democracy as practiced is going to be nothing but the triumph of the mediocre. Yeah. Andy, I thank you very much for calling. We're fresh out of time. Jess Connell, thanks very much, and Master Control. Montreal will be back with you tomorrow night.